Hi, today is June 6th, 2021. This is Mobile News Podcast 366. I'm Tadagasa Orr, my good friend, who is back from his super secret mission. And I'd like to thank my old friend, Daryl Lajola, who was nice enough to be the guest panelist last weekend. It was good catching up, one of the catching up series. We still got to get more friends back on. Okay, so WWDC starts when, John? This week, Monday, Tuesday?
Yep, it is tomorrow. Tomorrow is the keynote as we record this. Another Apple event that I actually have things at work that are going to keep me from watching live. but I will. I've already got some time slotted off in the afternoon to rewatch, and catch up. So it's just become the norm now that I do not get to watch Apple events live. I think the last one I saw live was WWDC's keynote last year.
Oh, wow.
And everything since, I've been catch up.
Okay, so what do we know and what's the speculation? I haven't really been tracking this one that much.
We don't know a lot. There's actually quite a bit of ambiguity this year. The one that I've seen the most is this idea of a new MacBook Pro. In fact, Apple is apparently having an event after the keynote, or at least the rumor is today, that there will be a special event tomorrow immediately after the keynote. And that might be where hardware and other things are announced. That's a little weird for them to do a keynote and then do a special event right after the keynote. So maybe the keynote will be more developer-based and the special event will be hardware-based. But otherwise, there's very little on the list. You want me to go through what we do know?
Yeah.
So there's some rumors there might be Apple Silicon updates. Obviously, last year at WWDC is where Apple first announced Apple Silicon. Announced it in their MacBooks and Mac line. We already knew about Apple Silicon for the iPhones and iPads for years. But there might be some updates on that, different versions of the M1 or maybe M2 chip being announced. There are some rumors about iOS and iPadOS, but there's not nothing as concrete about what exactly will be different. A few things I've read have suggested that there'll be different notification preferences, perhaps some customization of the iPad home screen. The iPad desperately does need some changes to its UI because it's got a lot of potential that for years it's not really taken advantage of. The most substantial rumors that I'm seeing are more privacy enhancements, which, of course, this has been Apple's big thing for a couple of years now, has been their stance on privacy. Some rumors of food tracking, a new food tracking feature in the health app. I mean, you could do this already if you know what your nutrients were. You can enter those manually into the food, into the health app. But this is also would be really cool if the rumors of a blood glucose reading in the Apple Watch Series 7 later this year, if that were to come to light. So if Apple can do that, that'd be pretty neat. The accessibility updates that we already know about, hopefully we would see more of those.
You know, it's funny, going back to food tracking, which on. I find... you okay?
All right, I had a cat activate Siri over here. Okay. And so... Siri thought that I was talking to it, and I was not.
But your cat was.
But yeah, so the cat was. The cat had a request.
Yeah.
So let's see, where was I?
Well, I was gonna say the food tracking thing. You know, it would be cool if you could take a photo of what you're eating, and they would figure out, you know, portion and calories
and you know,
carbs.
We've been promised that for a very long time. We've been promised that sort of an app for years.
Yeah, there was a short live service in Japan. I can't remember what it was called. And it was many years ago. This is not recent. This is like at least 10 years ago. Where you would take a photo of whatever you were eating and upload it to this service that, you know, you paid for. And a person would look at it and identify it and provide, you know, as much nutritional information based on estimates of, you know, what they're looking at in the photo. You know, obviously it wasn't 100% accurate. Well, you know, probably not even close to 100% accurate. But I thought it was a really interesting feature. You know, not scalable, unfortunately, but still interesting. So I'm I'm kind of curious. Anything they can do to automate that is a good thing.
Well, and I've been thinking more and more about Apple Watch Series 7. You know, I upgraded last year to Series 6, but I use my Apple Watch quite a bit, and my Apple Watch has been such a substantial contributor to losing over 100 pounds during the pandemic and losing over 200 pounds since, you know, March of 20 or May of 28. So I might actually get an Apple Watch Series 7, even though I have a 6, and just have two Apple Watches, one, you know, to use when the other's charging. But we'll see. If it has the blood glucose, I probably definitely would, just to be able to try that out.
I am in the same camp. I also have an Apple Watch Series 6, and I was not planning to buy a 7. But if there are more, you know, health metric type things available, like blood glucose, I also would find that very interesting. I still want AirPods that does my temperature, by the way.
That's a rumor, too. That is another rumor that we would see a new version of AirPods Pro at some point in the next year that would have, rumor is, increased fitness, health and fitness features. Yeah. So I would assume that would be temperature and other things that it could conceivably take.
You know, during the height of the pandemic, that would have been awesome, because then you would, you know, every place you go for screening goes, yeah, here's my current temperature. Here's my temperature for the last 24 hours, you know. It would have been
awesome.
Here's
what I am right now.
Yeah.
At this very moment.
Right.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
So, and then the only other two things, some changes to iMessage, some improvements. I don't really know along what lines, but people have suggested copying some of the features that WhatsApp has, although I apparently don't use them, because I can't think of anything that WhatsApp does that iMessage doesn't do.
I've never used WhatsApp, so I don't even know how to compare it. Yeah.
Yeah. And finally, there's these veiled references to something called Home OS, the idea that Apple might be releasing an operating system that presumably would be for IoT type of things. But we would see. So that's the rumor mill right now, the day before WWDC, and it's not as rich as we've seen in previous years, the rumor mill being.
I've seen some rumors about, it's probably a long shot because I don't think they've ever announced an iPad or iPad Mini at this event, but there's rumors about an iPad Mini Pro being announced or something like that.
Might be at that special event after the main event.
Good point. I'm really curious about whatever happens to iPad OS, however. You know, I'm still on the cusp. Is it cusp? On the edge? I'm still haven't decided whether or not to buy an M1-powered iPad Pro. I'm very tempted, but I just bought one last year, and it is awesome. And I know the M1 version is awesomer, but it's still a lot of money for, you know, something that's just barely better than what you have now. But if there are M1-specific features that comes out, you know, in iPad OS later this year, I guess I have a couple of months to think about it between WWDC and whenever iPad OS update is released, probably in September. So I'll have a couple of months to think about it. What about you? You thinking about any M1 devices?
Potentially. You know, my iPad Pro is my oldest Apple device right now. It's 2018 iPad Pro, 11-inch.
Still a nice one.
Been very reliable, very stable. Yeah. Haven't had anything to convince me to upgrade yet. So that would be the next thing that I would be upgrading, but we'll see. I am so tempted to pick up a M1 MacBook just to play with, but I really don't need it. And my MacBook Pro that's just over a year old that I picked up the last of the Intel generation, which was on purpose. I wanted to have that last latest and greatest, or last and greatest of the Intel versions. It's rocking everything as quickly as I need it. So,
yep, I am using an 2019 MacBook Pro right now to record this session. So I'm with you there, or near with you. Did you get the 2020 Intel?
Yeah, I have the 2020.
Okay, I've got the 2019, and it's you know, I hate, you got the good keyboard, as I recall. I still have the stupid butterfly keyboard, which is awful. You know, and I would say one thing, one of the rumors I've heard about the new MacBook Pro, you know, the M2-based one or whatever it is that they're going to get rid of the touch bar. Did they get rid of the touch bar in the M1-powered MacBook Pro? I don't recall.
I don't think so. But, yeah, I've heard that, too, that the touch bar is going away. And I actually use the touch bar enough.
Me too.
I would not be a fan of leaving.
Yeah, I have this MacBook Pro 2019 sitting in front of me, which I use to record podcasts, and it has a touch bar, which I thought I would never use when I bought it, and I find myself using it all the time to, change the volume or, whatever other various kinds of options are placed in front of me on the thing. It's actually pretty darn useful. And I have to say that when I switch to my M1 powered MacBook Air, I kind of miss it. I don't miss it enough to spend hundreds of dollars more to buy a M1-powered MacBook Pro, but I do kind of miss it. What I don't miss when I switch to the M1 is the fan. I don't know if you can hear it now, but every time I run Skype on this thing, the MacBook Pro, Intel-powered MacBook Pro, just says, "Oh, Skype, turning the fan on right now." the M1-powered MacBook. I'm sorry, M1-powered iPad Pro is really, really, really tempting. I've been looking at some of the stuff that Procreate, the drawing app, does. That's really takes advantage of M1, and I'm kind of curious to see what else happens. By the way, your 2018 iPad Pro still has a mini plug earphone jack, right? So you're going to lose that when you upgrade.
Oh, I don't think it does, actually. Oh, I've never used it, so I don't know if it has it or not.
Okay. I think it does. I think the 2018 still had one. And the 2020 definitely doesn't have one. And the sad thing is I have no intention of trying that new, what's that new, not spatial audio. What's the new thing Apple's pushing? The
Dolby Atmos.
Yeah, that Dolby Atmos thing. I guess it would run on my iPad Pro 2020, but I don't have any headphones compatible with it. AirPod Pros aren't. Yeah, even the $550 AirPod Max doesn't. I mean, that's kind of a crazy upgrade, in my opinion. But in any case.
Yeah. That is ostensibly what the event tomorrow, the special event, is supposed to be about after the keynote is Atmos. But yeah. I don't know. It wouldn't surprise me if Apple sneaks other things in there as well.
Yeah. Maybe new AirPod Pros.
That they will, they can, that you can use Atmos on the AirPod Pros. That would be nice, a nice surprise.
Yeah. Although, don't you need a cable? I mean, isn't Bluetooth too slow or doesn't have enough bandwidth for Atmos? Not sure.
I don't know.
Yeah, I think it's only with cabled headphones right now for whatever, obviously third party. I don't think Apple has anything that's compatible either. So I'm not sure. This is weird. This is a weird upgrade, in my opinion.
I agree.
Unless it's intended for people at home studios, but,
go ahead. What are you wanting at WWDC? I have my want list, but I'm curious what you would love to see tomorrow.
I would love to see but more biometrics from everything, announced for the next version of AirPod Pros, next iPhone, next everything. If we learn nothing else during the pandemic, is that knowing about yourself is really important, regardless on what side of the fence you fall on for various kinds of beliefs and, things. So I really hope that we see more of that. Like you said, the glucose monitoring thing, I am not diabetic, but hey, sounds like it's an interesting thing to have and useful, more than interesting, I guess. Especially as you get older, you're always kind of at higher risk for various kinds of things. So really interested in that. I really want to see something done with the iPad that's functionally interesting, but not overly dramatic, just for the sake of being different. I'm not quite sure what that is, whether it's a tighter tiling system for icons or a better home screen experience definitely is on my list. I don't think the home screen experience in the iPad is not very, it's good, it's better than anything else, but it's not quite where I want it to be if I had my druthers. So, I guess I'll have to wait a couple of months before I see any of this. So we'll find out more tomorrow.
Yeah, one of my wishes, I have two small wishes and then something very nebulous. The first is further customization of Apple Watch faces.
Oh, yeah.
We're getting so close to custom faces. Last year with Apple allowing you to bundle a face and share it and add different complications and multiple of the same complication on the same screen and all that. We're getting close, but I want custom faces or more ability or at least more faces. Apple does tend to provide every year more faces. Because I've been getting into shortcuts quite a bit, I want more actions and shortcuts. Maybe some things that could do some offline processing, or not offline, but background processing in Shortcuts. Right now, Shortcuts runs everything in real time as you invoke it. It would be nice if you could have, you know, schedule tasks, in a sense, in Shortcuts.
You want coding.
And, yeah. And I have a developer account, so I could just write the apps to do what I want them to do, but I want Apple to do it for me.
Sure.
And then my nebulous thing is I want something, anything, that will tempt me to install the betas early. Every summer, I look at the betas, and I don't install them until typically August at the earliest, after they've had a little bit of time to settle. I want something that is so cool that I'm looking at the beta tomorrow and going, maybe it's stable enough. Maybe I should just only give it a month. That'd be really nice.
Yeah. You know, it's funny you say that, because I have never installed an Apple beta either. And I used to install betas of all kinds of things in, you know, previous years, Windows and, as you know, Pocket PCs and so forth. But I've never done an iOS or macOS beta that I can recall. And I don't know why, because I do have spare devices. You know, I even have an old iPhone 10 that I could dedicate to a beta, but I just haven't. Maybe I'll think about it this year. That said, let's see. You know, I really wish... One thing I really like to see, by the way, is more stability for Bluetooth connectivity. And it's been our wish for well over a decade now on every device we've had. You know, our old buddy Ed, we used to rant about that. My AirPod Pros, you know, if you have multiple devices, if you only have one device, it's probably not a problem. But if you have an iPad and an iPhone, or in my case, like two iPads and an iPhone, you know, iPad Mini, iPad Pro, and iPhone, you're like, it's supposed to know, it's supposed to connect automatically, but it doesn't always. And on my iPhone in particular, for some reason, it's been dropping during calls. Like, I'll make a call, you know, I don't make very many voice calls, but I have made a couple of calls over the last couple of weeks where, you know, I was talking and it would drop. And I said, hey, where'd the person go? And I, you know, put the phone near my ear, go, oh, they're talking. They're still talking, but it's coming over my, you know, my iPhone speaker. And I have to manually reconnect. And this has happened several times. So, and yes, I've unpaired it and repaired it and all that kind of stuff. So I've done all of that. I'm not quite sure what else to do now. It doesn't happen frequently enough to really tick me off, but it's concerning. So, but Bluetooth is Bluetooth. It's just the way it is. So we shall find out more tomorrow. And you said the special event is right after the first day's...
teasing that it does have something to do with Atmos. But I'm hoping that there'll be more than just Atmos.
Yeah, another headphone I can't afford. Do you know anybody who bought the AirPods Max or whatever they're called? AirPod Max?
No, I was very tempted and then I held off. But mostly because my Beats Solo 3s are still working really well, other than I have one dead cell in the battery, because it'll jump from 30, I think it's 25 to 50%, or 50% down to 25% very quickly. So, but otherwise, still gets pretty good battery life.
And now that I read that it's those $550 headphones aren't compatible with their new Atmos sound system, I'm even happier I didn't buy it. That would have been a complete waste. All right.
And you agree.
And it might require like an M1 powered device. That would be interesting too. Because, you know, one of the things I notice is recently I've been starting to watch movies on my iPad with my AirPods instead of, you know, with a wired headset or something else. Mm-hmm. And I was thinking, oh, I should turn on spatial audio. Except spatial audio is only compatible with my 2020 iPad Pro. It is not compatible with my 2018 iPad Pro, as far as I can tell. At least I don't have the option to turn it on when I'm using it with that. But I do see it when I use my iPhone 12 Pro or my iPad Pro 2020. So it doesn't go back all the way. It's kind of like what's that thing that lets you use your iPad as a
sidecar.
Sidecar doesn't work with one of my iPad minis, but it does with the other, something like that. Even though they're all running the same version of iPad OS. Okay, and speaking of switching and things like that. So, as of June 1, which is just 5 days ago, or 4 days ago, depending how you count, Google turned off unlimited photos for new photos added. By the way, I don't know why people are rushing to move all their photos out of Google Photos. Everything you stored prior to June 1st is still free to store. even if it's more than your, you know, 5 gigabytes or whatever, 15 gigabytes, whatever amount of space, free space you have on Google's cloud system, there, you know, Google Drive. Mm-hmm. So you don't have to move everything, but people are. But at any rate, since all new photos are now counting towards your whatever your storage is, and I have Google One, so I've got like 115 gigabytes. I switched taking photos for the most part from my iPhone to my Pixel 4a. And it's been an interesting trip back to Android for taking photos. The two main differences is that the 4a does not have wide angle, which is a huge loss for me. Mm-hmm. So I still do take a wide angle photos of my iPhone. I think I've taken one photo on my iPhone since June 1st, and it doesn't have a LiDAR, which, you know, as I keep saying, I've never found any LiDAR apps I really want to use. But the apps you don't think about using is the camera app on the iPhone, which uses LiDAR for fast focus, and especially in dim light or night shots, you know, for kids and pets and stuff when you're taking photos, in my case, pets. So the Pixel 4a has a night mode. In fact, it had it before the iPhone, but it's really slow compared to iPhone because it doesn't have LiDAR. So I really missed a wide angle and really fast, you know, low light nighttime photos. But I did discover some other things. Like, for example, it's got a tilt meter right on the camera. When you take, it's been there since apparently late 2020. I just never noticed it because I hardly use it as a camera. But now that I'm using it every day, you know, it's got a tilt meter that when you hold up your phone, it shows you the tilt angle of your phone relative to the ground. And of course, you basically want it at zero. I've got a photo pasted in our show notes for John to look at. I tilted it really a lot at 19 degrees. So John can see that I've got a 19 degree tilt on the meter on my my screenshot there.
It looks like you have a very pronounced gangsta swag over there.
Yeah. So, you know, that's really handy when you're shooting a landscape or something and you want to get the landscape straight and you don't want to do it in post and, you know, lose pixels and all of that from the corners. So that's pretty cool. And I do have to spend more time. You know, I've spent obviously the last, you know, 4.5 days or five and a half days using this as my camera. And interesting. Oh, one thing it does much better than the iPhone, by the way, is portrait mode. Even though it only has one lens, its portrait mode is awesome because because it uses AI versus, you know, optical bokeh. It actually is not as sensitive to distance. Where on an iPhone, you got to be like a couple of feet away before portrait mode kicks in. On the Pixel 4, it just kicks in pretty much right away. I mean, you can't be like, you know, up to somebody's nose, but the bokeh effect kicks in right away for portrait mode to blur the background. So I thought that was pretty cool. And of course, it's always had a couple of features that the iPhone still doesn't have. And that's PhotoSphere. Or I should say one feature, PhotoSphere, which is kind of neat, where you can literally spin around 360 degrees up and down to get a literal photographic sphere that, when viewed in Google Photos and I think in Google Maps, you can kind of spin around and see the world around you as you photographed it. So I'm still using Google Photos. I'm still paying Google One. As I mentioned a couple of weeks ago when we were talking about it, Google One is $199 per month if you pay monthly, but if you want to save $4, you can pay $20 a year, you know, $19.99. So you can do an annual subscription and it's $20. If you are on the fence on whether or not you want to keep using Google Photos or not, you can buy it, you know, at least a year's time to make that decision by spending $20 to continue using it. And presumably, you know, if you are under your 15 gigabyte free limit, adding 100 will give you a lot of time to think about it. So, there is that. All right. Now, John has bought some fun stuff, including one thing I bought but haven't made probably half of a good use as he is.
Well, I don't know. I haven't made too much use of this. So I was telling Todd that on my super secret mission last week, I ended up at a Micro Center. Micro Center is a chain of electronics stores that if you walk into one, you feel like you're walking into 1995. I mean, they haven't updated the look of their stores since 1995. It is what you would consider a computer store from 1995. Any computer thing you would want, from building your own PC to anything related to computers, printers, routers, laptops, component pieces, all of that, all available, and it looks like 1995. So it's a very nostalgic sort of thing. I was there with a friend. He was looking at some stuff for a system that he's building out. And so I wandered over to the Raspberry Pi display and all of those things, and I picked up a Raspberry Pi 400, nice. Which is the Raspberry Pi that sits inside its own pre-built case, mm-hmm. keyboard case. It comes with the Raspberry Pi mouse. It comes with a very nice getting started guide. It comes with the micro HDMI to full-size HDMI cable. Yep. The operating system is pre-installed on the SD card, so that's another nice thing that you don't typically get with a Raspberry Pi 4. And so I brought it home, and I played with it a bit this week. But one of the things I needed is a monitor for it. Mm. So I have a very strange monitor set up for 2021. I have Apple Cinema displays at home and at work that run off of mini DisplayPort and nothing else. And to get a Raspberry Pi to output over mini DisplayPort is not easy. So then I have a TV that's on its last legs that will produce an HDMI, allow HDMI right. in. It's not that old. It's only from 2009. But then I have to get the HDMI cable set up and hook it into the TV and all that. And I have a very old monitor from 2007 that is DVI or VGA. And I do have an adapter for it for HDMI. But it's all packed up. It's a 24-inch Asus monitor. So I ended up picking up while I was at Micro Center. I went over to one of the guys. I said, let me see what portable monitors you have. And he showed me the Asus portable monitors they have, the Zen Screen series. I ended up picking up a Zen Screen Touch, which is the top of the end Zen Screen. It's around $340. Mm-hmm. 15-inch monitor. It has an internal battery, internal speakers. It can accept video over HDMI, which it does nice. Convert to micro HDMI. So that it comes with a cable that goes from full-size HDMI to micro. And it'll actually accept video over USB-C. So it charges over USB-C. I plugged in my iPad Pro to it using a USB-C cable and was able to use that as a second monitor for my iPad Pro, nice. Which I thought this is a nice little use scenario where if I'm ever traveling and I need to present something to someone, I can plop the Zen screen in front of them. I can have the iPad in front of me and they can see what I'm doing. And it'll actually support presentation mode on things like PowerPoint and other apps that output to a second monitor.
That is very nice.
And it was also very convenient for the Raspberry Pi 400 because I could set up on just a little table the Raspberry Pi 400. The only thing the 400 doesn't have
is
that I think would make it a killer device would be a battery.
Yeah.
If it had a battery, that thing would be the slickest thing around. And I'm very tempted to think about opening it up and seeing if there's anything there to put a battery in because that would be very neat. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, I'm looking up right now if somebody's already done that.
It would not surprise me. One of the nice things that the 400 comes with is a manual that is very reminiscent of the manuals that came with early hobbyist computers, things like the Commodore 20 and Commodore 64. And it's just a really cool teach-yourself programming. Yep. And, of course, all the programming they're teaching you is Python. So you're learning a useful programming language. And it has a special chapter on if you have the Pi hat for producing, for working with I/O devices. It has a chapter for the Pi camera. So if you want to build an app that uses the camera, you can do that. So I think it's a very nice system. I don't really know what I'm going to do with it. I think you've probably had the same problem with your Pi 400. It's really cool. I like taking it out. I actually installed Twister OS on it. Which, for those of you that are not, you don't know what Twister is. Twister is basically a novelty in a sense. It allows you to reskin Raspberry Pi OS to look like Windows 95, Windows 7, Windows XP, Mac OS. It's just fun to play with. There's a lot of love, I think, put into Twister. And so I downloaded it and played around with it on my Pi 400. So I think my best case scenario is that I either find a little IoT thing to build for my house, maybe a little touchscreen monitor station that I could put somewhere that have a keyboard and run it all off the 400, or wait for one of my nieces and nephews to show any interest at all in programming and bring it to them and say, hey, try this out. This is pretty cool. They're getting to ages where that might be possible in the next couple of years, but yeah. I don't think quite yet. My oldest niece is still very much into Barbies, and I haven't had much luck converting her to being a geek yet, but it might happen.
Well, I did see a 2-year-old that qualified for Mensa in the news the other day, so you can never tell.
That just shows you that the 2-year-old likes solving brain puzzles, you know.
Hey, I have a question about the Asus touchscreen you bought. So I'm looking at the picture of it, and I see that it has one of those cases that allegedly folds over into a stand. Does that thing actually work?
It does, but it is the weirdest. It is not intuitive at all. So okay. It reminds me of the original iPad cases, and I'm actually pulling it out to show Todd what you can and can't do with it. Because you think that it's going to work like the original iPad case. So you're looking at it and you sort of expect, okay, it's, it's got these like weird things. Prop it up and all that. But it's not, it just doesn't have enough for that. So really the way that I've found that it works is by folding it over like this. So it's got like a little lip in the front.
Yeah.
And then that lip is what keeps it folded up. But it's if you're used to the iPad covers and thinking of it in that way and thinking, oh, I'm just going to flip it behind and I'm going to do it that way. No, it doesn't work that way.
Okay, because that, I bought a non-touch, much less, a different brand, much less expensive monitor. It's about $150, I think, on sale. So it's less than half the price. But it doesn't have touch and it doesn't have a battery, so it doesn't have a lot of the features yours has, which is very tempting. But anyway, what I was going to say is it also came with a folding case that looks suspiciously like the one you have. And I could not for the life of me forget it to ever work. I mean, ever. Fortunately, I had some, mechanical stands that I could stick it on. But it just wasn't, I don't know, it just kind of defeated the purpose of having that case.
I'm actually looking at the way that Asus, according to their product picture, makes it look like you're supposed to put it. And it will not stand up. It just won't.
Yeah. Same here. I mean,
so that's very ironic.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, they lie. But so how are you going to stand it up? You're going to just use like a mechanical iPad stand for it? Or
It will stand up that way. It's just that it's got this little lip in the front.
Yeah.
So just not the way it's in the picture. The lip that looks like it tucks in underneath, it just doesn't tuck in underneath.
Yeah, it's just a bad design.
It works, but it's not what you're expecting.
Yeah, it looks like the exact same cover that came with my other branded display, and it's just as disappointing in terms of intuitive use. But the monitor itself looks like a winner. I'm kind of tempted to go buy one.
It's pretty nice.
Yeah, I do need to find a way to mount it someplace, but I'll figure that out. So I'm keeping that on my screen because I'm thinking about it. Never mentioned you're a terrible person. But any rate, the other benefit to your new Raspberry Pi 400 is that it is overclocked. So unless you overclocked your Raspberry Pi 4s, it is now the fastest. I know you have several Raspberry Pis. It is the fastest Raspberry Pi in your home right now. I would.
It is the fastest, but not the most fun. The most fun is still probably the Pi Boy.
The Pi Boy.
That looks like it.
Are you still using that, by the way? I mean, like once a week or something?
I do. I was for a while. I have not taken it out in a couple months, although I did boot it up a few weeks ago just to make sure that it was still working and all that. But that thing is a great time waster.
Yeah. Speaking of wasting time, I am trying to figure out how to waste time by doing stuff like that. I still need a better physical setup for my Raspberry Pi 400. I don't have a good setup. I should probably take down one of my Windows PCs, desktop PCs, and just replace it with the Raspberry Pi keyboard in that spot and put a monitor to work. I have the same problem you had, by the way. So I didn't really think it through, right? So I bought the Raspberry Pi 400. I think, well, I've got a lot of displays in my home. You know, it's obviously they're going to work. No. They're all DVI or VGA. And, you know, I guess I have a converter cable, but that's not quite what I wanted. So, you know, that didn't quite work out. But, yeah, looking forward to finding it. And for folks out there, speaking of John is talking about his nieces and nephews and so forth. I didn't buy it, but just happened to read. I was going through Y Combinator's news feed this morning, and I did happen to see that somebody published a book that's a picture book to teach kids Python programming. So there weren't any pictures of the picture book, I mean, aside from the cover, so I don't know how good it is. But it's an intriguing concept. You know, for folks who know about Asian cultures in Asia, you can learn anything in a comic book. I mean, you can learn, you know, advanced economics. You can learn pretty much anything in a comic book over there. And I wish we would see more of that here for people who are more, you know, image-focused versus text-focused. So, cool idea. I hope it's a good book. I know nothing about it except that it exists. And I saw it on, I did go look at it on Amazon. It's like $10. So it's not terribly expensive. And you can get a Kindle version, so you don't even have to wait for it. If any of our fives of listeners gets it for their kids, let us know. Or for themselves. You know, it's for any beginner Python programmer. Let us know how it is. Okay, John, so I expect we'll have a lot more to talk about next week after WWDC. I hope it's not like Google I.O., which was a total washout.
We will see. I am very, very eager to see what happens tomorrow.
Me too. And in a couple of more weeks, on June 24th, Microsoft is supposed to have some kind of Windows announcement. Apparently something to succeed Windows 10, which they said was the last Windows. So I'm not sure, you know, what happened to that idea. I guess it's not, there's rumors it's going to be Windows 11, by the way. I think they should just call it Linux and be done with it. Microsoft Linux and we're done. Cause you know, the Linux, what's the Linux, add-on that's in Windows now. I mean, it's been in it for years, but the container that you can install to run Linux, it now runs, I think, the version that's coming out that's in the insider version now can run X Windows apps. So that's pretty cool. All righty. Okay. And that brings us to the end of Mobileese Podcast 366. Thanks for joining us. Thanks to Daryl for last week for stepping in while John was on his super secret mission, buying a Raspberry Pi 400 and other toys. And we will talk to you next time.